Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon. Welcome to Blood Magic, the podcast. Selena Anderson is a small-town teacher with a big-time problem with vampires who are out to kill her before she can make them her next meal. She is looking forward to a quiet, lazy summer in Culpeper, Virginia. At least this is her plan until three strangers enter her life in one day. Welcome to podcast episode number 5. We learn more about the Red Leather Journal and slide into chapter 3. Back at my apartment building, I crossed the parking lot like a thief with a stolen bag of goods. I looked at every shadow, wondering what would happen next. I didn't even stop to check my mailbox. I walked up the stairs of the garden-style unit to the third floor. Once inside my apartment, I threw all the locks, including the chain and deadbolt. Octavia came out of hiding, yowling at me about her late dinner. "Hi, Kitty." "Yeah, I'm hungry too." I scratched the top of her head. I dropped my purse, keys, and the book on the curio by the door and made my way to the restroom. I wanted things to be normal again. I went along with my evening ritual and washed my hands and face and changed into my pajamas. I settled on my black and red musical notes outfit. I braided my hair. The next stop was the kitchen to fix us both some dinner. On the menu was minestrone soup for me and more tuna delight for Octavia. With the basics of life taken care of, I started to head to the bedroom. I thought for a moment and decided to get the book that was worth so much trouble. I turned on the reading light next to my bed, left the television off, and was happy to note I didn't need to set my alarm clock. I climbed in under the green and yellow plaid quilt. Octavia took up her post at the foot of my bed on her own yellow blanket. I gave the red leather book the once-over, turning it over, looking for a title and an author. There was none. I opened to a random page and realized it wasn't a book, but somebody's personal journal. Dates and entries were written all throughout the volume. I figured the best place to start was at the beginning. May 23rd. The team was exhausted. We had finally made it to a suitable site in the Congo. We could begin the task of unpacking and creating the camp. By tomorrow, we can continue with our trek. Some of the natives tell us that we are crazy for searching for the rare pox blossom in this jungle. They believe the caves by which they are grown are protected by a superstitious version of the boogeyman. I believe the flower's cancer-fighting properties will save millions of lives, better than chemotherapy and other toxic treatments, if only we could find an abundant and reliable source. There was a knock at the door to my apartment. I checked the clock next to my bed and it was almost midnight. I wasn't expecting anyone at this late hour, and anybody that was a friend knew not to come over without calling first. I went back to the journal. The caller was going to have to move on to somewhere else. I heard someone jiggle the knob and knock more insistently. This was going to be another problem. Before I could leave my bedroom, the front door was forced in, violently, destroying all locks in the safety chain. I slammed the door to my bedroom closed and locked it. I doubt it would last any longer than the front door. I realized I didn't have my cell phone with me or any way to call for help. Octavia rose on her haunches and hissed. Heavy footsteps on the hardwood floor sounded closer and closer. The would-be criminal was coming straight from my bedroom. I darted to the window and pulled back the curtains. A three-story fall with a cat in tow was not going to be pleasant, but my options were limited. I grabbed shoes and wrapped Octavia in her blanket, then lifted the window wide so I could crawl out. "Selena, I know you're in there. Just come out so we can have a talk." A masculine voice calmly suggested on the other side of the door. My luck with men today was not holding up. who knew me and would break into my apartment for a chat. I wasn't going to stay and find out. I put both feet out the window and wiggled out onto the ledge. I used my free hand to brace myself. Octavia began to struggle, and I began to worry about the taste of asphalt. I didn't worry too long before I heard the splinter of the door of my bedroom. Then I was falling into darkness. Chapter 3. I was lying on a hard, lumpy bed that was not my own. I took a quiet assessment of my body, expecting to feel broken and bruised from my fall out of the window. I didn't feel any broken bones, but I did feel binds around my ankles. I opened my eyes. The room was illuminated with the soft flickering of candlelight. Wooden beams crossed the ceiling, and I could see slivers of moonlight through cracks in the wood paneling. The bed I was on was nothing more than a red and blue plaid quilt over a mound of musty hay. I swung my bound legs over the side and found myself facing two more trapped women. They were both in lawn chairs with their arms and legs bound in duct tape over their mouths. The first one had short brown hair that was plastered to her skull with sweat and grime. Her blue eyes were red-rimmed. She was wearing a tattered and torn gray jogging suit. The woman next to her looked a little fresher. She was Latina with jet black curls that had frizzed into the rarity of an afro. She was dressed in jeans and a cream blouse with suspicious stains all over it. They were a mess of mud and grass with some splattering of blood. I didn't know what was going on, but I felt it was time for me to make an exit. I reached down to remove my own bindings and felt around for the edge of the tape. At the same time, I scanned the room for an exit. The door was to my left, and right away I spied the shiny gold deadbolt halfway from the top. There were no knobs on this side of the door, so it must have been locked from the outside. While the door may have proved to have been a barrier, there were plenty of windows. I found the edge of the tape and freed myself. I went to the other two women to help them do the same. The Latina was first. "I'm sorry, but this is probably going to hurt," I whispered before yanking the tape off her mouth. "You have to get out of here," she croaked. "Forget about us and call the police. We won't all make it out of here." "Where are we? How did you get here?" I had a multitude of questions and not much time to ask them. "I don't know what town we are in, but this is an old farmhouse. I'm Maxine Gonzalez from Fairfax, and this is Cindy Levine from Warrington," she continued in a hurried whisper. The names were familiar, and it suddenly dawned on me. "You're from the news. You're both supposed to be dead by the boyfriend murderer." Warnings of a serial killer had been in the local and national news for months. Single women of varying ages and ethnicities who lived alone were being targeted. The killer would approach them one day and give them trinkets like jewelry, watches, and other mementos. Shortly after that, the women would turn up dead in their home, surrounded by carnage. He had been dubbed the boyfriend murderer. He gave gifts like a boyfriend, then killed in fits of passionate rage. "There's a man watching over us. We've been here for days, with no food and very little water. He tied us up and checks on us at night. You'd better get out of here before he comes back and trusts you up like us." She didn't have to tell me a third time. I thought about that red leather journal that I had received. I had been targeted by the boyfriend murderer and hadn't even realized it. I tried the door despite the lock just to be sure. The windows were the only option. Having to jump out of two windows in one night seemed to be too much bad luck to me. Nevertheless, I walked barefoot to the first bank of windows next to the door. It overlooked a dry, grassy field. The field went on for what had to be a mile to the north, but to the east and west, it was banked by dense woods. We were about two stories off the ground. I raised the dusty, cracked window and began to crawl out onto the roof. I was determined to find a way to get to the main road and find help. I just had the first half of my body out of the window. I heard Maxine scream, "Run!" I looked behind me and saw the shadow of a man in the doorway. I scrambled down the tilted roof. He was lightning fast and grabbed my right ankle. His grip was fierce, and his hands dug into my skin like a bear claw. I tried to anchor myself to the roof by latching onto the shingles. He dragged me and the shingles back through the window. "Selena, what is it with you and windows?" he asked to my back. Once I was half in the window, he gripped me around the waist and lifted me back into the room, the candlelit prison he had created. I refused to turn around and accept my defeat until he turned me by my shoulders. A thought occurred to me that I would be facing the pale man from the library. I was mistaken. I was presented with a man that was over a foot taller than me, tightly coiled muscles bunched from behind a gray t-shirt. His skin tone was a rich, sun-kissed bronze, and his hair a few shades darker. His eyes were a startling clear green. He had high cheekbones and a healthy abundance of lips. He could have been on the cover of any GQ magazine or in a commercial to sell men's cologne to women, except for the jagged scar that ran from his left temple over his eyebrow. "Well, what do you have to say? Do I pass inspection?" he said, each syllable of inspection as if it was a dirty word, and he wanted me to be embarrassed. However, I was beyond being embarrassed. I was confident. I was looking into the face of a killer. "You're the boyfriend murderer," I seethed, and dared to try to kick him in the shin. It was like kicking the goalpost on the high school football field. I winced, annoyed I'd hurt myself more than I hurt him. He narrowed his eyes and put a vice-like grip on my shoulders. "I am nothing like that animal. I'm actually trying to protect you," he said in a quiet, controlled voice. "Since when is kidnapping women, tying them up, and starving them a form of protection?" I fired back. He opened his mouth as if he were about to explain more before pursing his lips together in a straight line. Then he turned and shoved me out in front of him towards the hay-filled bed. I knew I couldn't fight him physically, and his silent treatment showed me that I couldn't talk my way out of the situation either. Once on the bed, he produced the infamous roll of duct tape and kneeled in front of me. "If you hit me or try to run, I won't be as nice next time," he warned with a chilling smile. With that, he began to bind my legs at the ankles, then quickly moved to my wrist. I looked over his head at my fellow prisoners. Maxine was silently crying while Cindy stared dejectedly at the floor. "We've been here for days," echoed through my mind. I wondered if those days would turn into weeks, as no one knew where we were or thought we were dead. "What are you going to do with us?" I whispered, more to myself, not really expecting an answer. "You have to pass a test before I will explain that," he responded, just as quietly. "What kind of tests?" "You'll see." He turned away and went back to the door where he had left an old green opaque bottle. He walked over to Cindy first and snatched the tape off her mouth. She looked up at him with childlike eyes. "Now, Cindy, be a good girl and take a nice big drink." He held the bottles to her lips and tilted it up for her. Perhaps she'd been here more than a few days. She drank greedily. Not one drop missed her mouth. Then the bronze man pulled up an old rocking chair next to her, crossed his long legs at the ankle, and waited. Time went by. The moon climbed higher in the sky, and he just sat there and continued to wait. I wasn't sure what he expected, but after a time he moved on to Maxine. He began to repeat the same procedure, but Maxine was not going quietly. She cursed at him in Spanish, spit at him until he finally grabbed her by the chin and jammed the bottle between her teeth. She could have easily have broken a tooth. "If you spit this out, it will be the last thing you do," he warned as he gave the bottle a tilt. Then he waited. It began to rain. At first it was soft, hesitant patter, then it gradually increased until it was a loud and insistent pounding. The ceiling was leaky and drops of rain began to find their way into the room, leaving dark stains on the wooden floor. He reached his unknown time limit. Then it was my turn. He'd never bound my mouth so there was no painful tape to be ripped off. "What is it?" I had to know. It wasn't poison, or the other women would have been dead by now, or so I thought. "Try some," he suggested. "I'd rather not." You have no choice. I stubbornly pursed my lips together when he lifted the bottle for me to drink. You can make this easy or hard, but you are going to drink, he warned me. I narrowed my eyes at him, wanting to say a few choice words, but I was refusing to open my mouth. He reached up with his free hand and pinched my nose closed. It's almost impossible to let yourself suffocate. Basic human survival instincts kick in, and you must have air. After a minute or two, I began to feel lightheaded. Then I had to gasp for air, and he took the opportunity to shove the bottle between my lips. The liquid slid over my tongue, cool and thick. The copper taste was undeniable. It was blood. My body and senses came alive. The man in front of me smelled of rich earth with a strange wildness. I instantly knew the blood was his, and he was not completely human. I fell back onto the bed with electric shivers. My binds tore away with the force. He used his broad shoulders to block me from the view of the other women. I looked around the room and everything was brighter and sharper, as if the room were lit with hundreds of bulbs instead of a few candles. The rain in the woods on the perimeter of the farm were calling for me to run free. Then I felt the danger. I had a vision of a dozen or so pair of red glowing eyes with bodies blacker than shadows creeping through those same woods, tracking our scent. It's you, my captor whispered, so low I doubt he meant for me to hear him. Your eyes glow gold fire. I didn't know about my eyes, but there was one thing I was certain of. Others are coming. We either run or die. What did you see? Black figures with red glowing eyes traveling in the woods. They are tracking us by scent. There are about a half a dozen of them. The minions, he said as he balled up an angry fist. He produced a knife from the waistband of his jeans. I had only a moment to wonder before he got to his feet and turned to Cindy and Maxine. He slipped their binds right down the middle. Ladies, he announced, I know you didn't come here willingly, but I meant you no harm. If you come with me now, I'll do my best to protect you. His voice was very grave and serious. Cindy and Maxine looked at one another, silently contemplating their decision. Maxine rubbed her sore wrist, then looked around our would-be captor. Are you going with them? She asked. I gave a resounding yes. She put her hand on Cindy's shoulder and gently squeezed. Come with us, she urged. Cindy was a little shell-shocked. Her tired eyes widened for a moment, then she looked down into her lap. A minute later, she nodded her head in agreement. We must be quick. I have to grab a few things downstairs, then we can leave in my truck. It was ironic how our captor was now a protector. Maxine and I stood under our own steam, but Cindy needed help. She began to slump back down into her chair. He reached out to catch her, but Maxine intervened. I've got her, she said as she drew Cindy's arm around her neck and caught her around the back. Before we do this, I began, can you at least tell us your name? He raised a sable eyebrow and simply said, Devlin. Then we were out the door. We raced down the stairs to the first story of the farmhouse. Yellow paint was peeling on the walls as we wound our way through the house. Old furniture was hidden beneath white, dusty sheets. The floors were ashen and squeaked in protest with almost every step we took. Devlin led us to a tiny kitchen. On the counter, he had an army fatigue travel bag. He reached in and pulled out a sawed-off shotgun. Do any of you know how to shoot a gun? He asked us, as calmly as if he were asking if we wanted cream in our coffee. We all shook our heads. We may not have time for this, but if we have to fight, we'll need all the gunpowder we can manage. He proceeded to give us a quick yet efficient tutorial on the guns. In addition to the shotgun, he had an array of weapons. I couldn't name them all, but Devlin made sure we knew the basics. In 5 minutes or so, we knew how to load the guns, how to take off the safety, and not aim the gun at anything we didn't want dead on the ground. I thought we were done, but then at the last minute, he added that we were using silver bullets. Silver bullets, Maxine questioned. What kind of people need silver bullets? They are not people. He handed us each a weapon. Cindy got a fierce-looking silver gun. Maxine's was sleek and black with a long muzzle. I got the shotgun. They are vampires, and you need to aim at the head or heart if you don't want to become their next meal. He threw the army bag over his shoulder and hefted his rifle over the other. The truck is this way. He led us out the back door in the kitchen. Outside, we followed a short gravel path to the carport. The truck was gleaming white under the dark garage like the proverbial knight in white armor. We immediately got in, took up our positions. Devlin was the driver. I took the passenger seat. Cindy and Maxine were in the back. We were off down the road, leading away from the farm to a main street. Gravel and mud flew up behind us. We looked all around through the sheets of rain. Everything looked washed out in the moonlight. I searched the edge of the woods, looking for the glowing red eyes. Shit! Devlin jammed on the brakes. In front of us, blocking our escape, were three tall, bald vampires in black. They were white as fresh bone, and their eyes flashed crimson in the truck's headlight. Hang on, this is going to be a rough ride, Devlin said as he revved the engine and roared forward. I rolled down my window and leaned out with the shotgun. I aimed at the nearest monster. He grinned at me, showing yellowed canines dripping with spittle. I took my shot. His chest exploded into a bloom of blood and torn flesh. You're a natural, Devlin laughed. The truck barreled down the other two, leaving serious damage to the grill of the truck. Vampire number two flew off the side, narrowly missing us. The third one wasn't so smart and became a hard speed bump beneath the tires, but I knew they weren't dead. They were taking damage as if to test us to see what we would do. The cab's glass shattered behind us. Shards flew to the front, landing on the dashboard like glittering drops of water. Cindy screamed. Another vampire was in the truck's bed and had reached in through the window to grab her by her short brown hair. He was dragging her backwards through the sharp remnants of the window. Maxine, shoot him, I yelled. She took aim and fired, but missed. Cindy had dropped her gun and clutched at the front seats, trying to anchor herself. Take the wheel, Devlin shouted. I took the wheel and jammed my foot on the gas pedal. He whipped around and aimed his rifle. Before he could take his shot, Cindy was out the window, and the bastard held her up as a human shield. Cindy! Maxine screamed. Then the vampire flew up into the air and disappeared into the night. We had lost her. It was eerily quiet. We waited. There's supposed to be more, I whispered. Devlin was back to be our driver, and he said, too? Yes, I saw half a dozen in my vision. They may think she is the one and be content for now. The one for what? Maxine demanded, as tears streamed down her face. Devlin was silent for a moment. We sped through the night on the country road. The farm was far behind us. He took a left and we were finally on a main highway. The rain was slowing down into a tolerable patter. The windshield wipers were doing a better job of keeping up. We have to slow down and try not to attract too much attention. We have these guns, and neither one of you are really dressed to be out. We could see the headlights of cars approaching from the opposite direction. What's going on here? The dramatic silence is getting to be too much. My high from the blood he gave me was wearing off, and I was starting to feel drained. The clock on the dashboard said 4:26 a.m. Who knew when we'd be able to stop again? I wondered when I'd be able to sleep peacefully again. Visions and dangerous vampires were big disruptions to my seemingly normal life as a school teacher. Devlin heaved a sigh and seemed to make up his mind. What I have to tell you would sound crazy to most sane people. Try us. The boyfriend murderer is really a vampire named Marcus. He is looking for special women. Women related to a unique tribe of people from the Congo and Africa. He settled in to give us what I hope was the whole story. I'm not African, I'm from Mexico, Maxine interrupted. Yes, I know. The tribe was not completely made of Africans. People from all over the world traveled as pilgrims, looking for the special brand of spiritual cleansing that this tribe had to offer. Many decided to stay behind and live as members, maintaining the culture and ceremonies. What kind of spiritual cleansing, I asked. I was familiar with many times in our history, now and in the past, where pilgrims made fantastic journeys for spiritual cleansing and enlightenment. There were caves in the Congolese jungle that grew a rare plant, the pox flower. The tribe used it to make a drink that cured whatever ailed the body and gave visions for one's destiny. This tribe lived for hundreds of years this way in peace. The pilgrims began to have visions of what they called the red-eyed devils. They saw these devils or vampires coming to them and bringing death and destruction. The vampires also wanted the ability to foresee the future, to know where and how to gain more power. Instead of letting this happen, the tribe disbanded and took the secrets of the Pox Flower with them. This happened around 30 years ago. Before they acted, however, Marcus slipped through. He had a vision that a woman would kill him and end his attempt to reign in power. He couldn't strike until the time was right, and he had enough of a following. He came to the U.S. months ago and has been killing daughters of the former tribe members that he'd been able to track down. Before he strikes, he meets the women and gives them trinkets he's stolen from their parents or parents from the tribe. It was Marcus that stopped me in the library parking lot. He gave me a journal, I said. He gave me an amber necklace, Maxine added. My parents had a set of word of this. They're simple farmers in Mexico living a modest and quiet life. And I'm adopted. I have no clue who my real parents are. Something was bothering me. It sat in the back of my mind, not quite clear enough for me to focus on. Maxine leaned in between the seats. Why didn't you just tell us this up front instead of kidnapping us? If I knocked on your door and told you the story, would you have walked away with me? We gave a resounding no. Even now I sense your doubt, Devlin said gruffly. And where do you fit in? The story was fantastic, but I needed more information. I am also one of the descendants of the tribe. We've been organizing to find more of us. I'm one of the guardians. It is my job to help to find the one and protect her. For how long? For as long as it takes, he replied. Where are we going now? Maxine chimed in. Richmond. We have a house there with more resources to help protect you, but first we need more gas, he finished. I saw two signs up ahead. One said gas, at the next right. The other said Richmond, 60 more miles. We took the right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Blood Magic, the podcast. Tune in same time, same place, as Selena travels to Richmond for more of her adventure.